Welcome to Ed Said, the podcast. It's Friday. I got to hit the road and drive to Rochester. I have a ton of work piled up in front of me, and well, who knows what I'm going to get out of here. So it's going to be a fun commute. My wife will be thrilled at my mood, and hopefully my child behaves. So here is your brief introduction. You're already used to Friday introductions being very short. Well, this one could be the shortest on record. Here on the podcast, we talk about vets, PTSD, dogs that help them, as well as protesting, hypocrisy about people complaining about protesters, and of course, what to expect from the Trump presidency. That is next. Here you go. Enjoy.
All right. It's Friday and Veterans Day. So thank a veteran. Thank you for your service. And let's remember that one day isn't enough. Let's remember it's something we should be doing every day of the year when it comes to taking care of our vets. We can do a lot more. We ask a lot of them, and thanks isn't enough when they need health care and they need mental health care and they just need to be taken care of overall. 888-574-2723. It is Friday. I am a little more loosey-goosey on Fridays because, like you, I just want to get home. Today, I get home to hop in the car and drive to Rochester, New York, to celebrate my wife's grandmother's 90th birthday. I don't think she's listening, so if I just ruined the surprise, I'm sorry to everyone. But we will be heading up there. Nothing great about getting in the car and making that drive. Love being there, but the man, that drive is boring. And then after having worked a whole day just to jump in the car, I will be certainly cranky. But it is always nice to get together with family and friends and celebrate something like that. 888-574-2723 is the number. If you have something to celebrate or anything else you want to talk about, please feel free to drop in, especially if it's something overly positive, as I feel we could use every little ray of sunshine we can deliver to each other in these times of division and anger back and forth, bickering, hypocrisy, and all the like. I do want, of course, I do still have a job to do, and I will talk about Donald Trump being Donald Trump. The president-elect finally got his Twitter back, and 9/19 last night tweeted, "Just had a very open and successful presidential election. Now professional protesters, incited by the media, are protesting. Very unfair." So if you thought we might get a presidential Trump having come all this way and actually won, casting accusations at the media, inciting these protesters, I'm not quite sure what a professional protester is. Many saying if they knew they could get paid to protest Donald Trump, they would. I agree. I don't obviously align with a lot of what he says. And if I knew I could make a couple extra bucks doing so, I'd be out there. But I am not. I am not one protesting. I'm going, as I said, to give him a chance. But he is not off to a good start. We expect more. Or you should expect more if you don't. This idea of pointing the finger at professional protesters, which isn't a thing, the media inciting it, and then calling it very unfair. I don't understand how you can win and call it unfair. But that's just me. Now, prior to that, he had talked about how Melania and Mrs. Obama spoke, saying a fantastic day in D.C., met with President Obama for the first time, really good meeting. Now, this morning, he switched over, saying, "Love the fact that small groups of protesters last night have passion for our great country. We will all come together and be proud." First of all, these aren't small groups. Second of all, what happened to the tweet from just, I don't know, let's see, 9 hours before, almost to the minute? Why the change? Not quite sure. This on the heels of in 2012, when President Obama was reelected, he said, "We can't let this happen. We should march on Washington and stop this travesty. Our nation is totally divided." So here's the thing. I'm not going to be out in the streets protesting his win. It is done. It is over. He gets every opportunity to succeed. This was an opportunity for him to extend an olive branch, to open dialogue, and instead calls those out on the streets, professional protesters, blames the media yet again, and says it's unfair to him. And then tries to walk it back while still insulting the groups of protesters by saying small groups of protesters. Couldn't just say love the fact that there are protesters out there that have a passion for our great country. We will always disagree, but we need to come together and be proud. He couldn't have just said that. He had to be who he is. And if you voted for him, you probably appreciate who he is. But you have to appreciate the hypocrisy in it of him in 2012 saying we should march and stop this travesty. And then when he's elected saying, oh no, you people just need to suck it up. Much like Joe Walsh, I believe Representative Joe Walsh is the one that says if Hillary wins, he would grab his musket. He is now telling those protesters to stop being crybabies. I can't abide by hypocrites or hypocrisy from either side. And that is what this is. When you thought Hillary was going to win as a Trump supporter, you were agreeing with people talking about getting their muskets and preparing for the worst. If you are now condemning the protesters for protesting, you are that hypocrite. Now, those protesters that have turned into rioters, you are free to criticize them. Made it 3 days. Not a bad run. Normally, when you get that many people together, the idiots show their colors early on and start breaking things because they have an excuse. It happens with any gathering of people for any reason. You look at that pumpkin festival in Keene that had to be moved because of rioting, or sports events where people go crazy. Those who decide to take the opportunity to act out in that manner should be condemned. But it does not, and I've said this when I disagree with the protesters, reflect the entirety of the protesters. Just like all these stories coming out of the young lady who fabricated the attack by Trump supporters on her. She is a bad person. Just like those who attacked the man while yelling, did you vote for Trump, are bad people. Just like the kids in schools who are yelling, build the wall at people in school are bad people. Bad people do bad things, and they always will. And they will always be a part of our society. And you have to recognize that they exist. Just like the person who spray painted Trump 2016 on the East Haddam woman's sign, the message of love, that said, dear Muslims, immigrants, women, disabled, LGBT folks, and all people of color, we love you boldly and proudly. We will endure. Now, whether or not the person who spray-painted Trump 2016 was an actual Trump supporter or somebody from the opposition who was trying to incite something, we don't know. Either way, they are a bad person. And I want to make that clear. It doesn't matter what side you are on. If you cross that line into vandalism, you are only undercutting what you support, and it puts you in the crowd of people I don't care to listen to. Let's go to Bob and Haddam. Good morning, Bob. Bob, go ahead.
I agree with you. Then I think, well, two things. One is, I don't see any of those protesters trying to stop the people that are damaging cars, breaking windows, setting buildings on fire. I don't see any of the protesters, any of them, standing in front of it saying no.
Bob, I don't know if you can. That's a generalization. There are reports.
No,
hold
did
on,
you see
Bob.
Any?
Hold, Bob. I'm not there, so no, I can't say
right,
that
but
I
you
did.
You saw the TV.
Nor
I didn't
are
see anybody standing.
So, Bob,
saying,
first of all, the cameras only capture a slight part, and what I did hear reports of was an individual who was having a shouting contest with an officer at an event. or a protest where the protesters did intervene and say, you need to move along, you're not doing us any good. There are people out there that do that. Now, when there are people smashing windows with whatever they have on them, yes, people are going to be apprehensive about approaching them because they are well armed. So, yeah, I agree with you. It's easy to say that you would approach someone who was doing that, but unless you're there, you don't know the situation.
Why don't they, if they want to protest, okay, do you have a problem with saying, look, fine, everybody should have the right to protest. If you want to protest, let's say, okay, go to Central Park or go to a park and protest. You don't have to go down the streets, break cars, do the window thing, but as long as they're on the street, they're going to do it. If there's nothing to do in a park, guess what? They're not going to do anything. Wouldn't that make a little bit more sense? But that's the problem. We don't have common sense. You know, fine, you want to protest here. Here's a whole park. Here's a whole area you can go protest. And I don't care both sides. Because whoever, I mean, it's always a protest comes into violence. Always.
Well, that's always, I mean, look at football games. There's always a fight at a professional football game. Anytime you get people with opposing views, whether it's politics or sports, there are going to be knuckleheads.
Wouldn't it make more sense to do
that? Bob, there are always going to be knuckleheads who escalate.
I agree, but you can't. They're having a ball game. That's a little bit different. They're going to protest. Give them a space to protest in. The college is giving these safe spaces. Let's give them a safe space.
I don't agree with them.
Fuzzy and make them feel good. And give them a safe
All right.
Space.
Thank you for the call. I don't think it's about safe spaces either. I think it's about personal responsibility. There are always going to be knuckleheads who take advantage of the situation who aren't there for a protest. They're there to take advantage of the anonymity of a crowd. That's just the way it is. You're hoping that people apply the same sensibilities that you and I live by, and there are people that don't, of all shades, of all political bents and affiliations. It's just a reality. It's an unfortunate reality, but it's a reality. What I'm getting at is the hypocrisy of Trump in 2012 saying, we should be in the streets, and then in 2016, when he won, calling it unfair, and the hope that he had been was going to be able to turn over a new leaf and be more presidential, more diplomatic, more mature. But he wasn't, and I don't think he can. 888-574-2723. And up next, we're going to look at more at the protests and exactly what you just mentioned, safe spaces. And I agree with you in that safe spaces are silly. Life is hard. Sometimes it's going to be tough on you. And we'll look at that next, as well as how these turn violent and what can be done. That's next here on Ed Says on the Talk of Connecticut. Tony, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. Hello, Ed?
Yes, go right ahead. You're live.
Okay, it's you. I'm sorry. I didn't know if I had you or the other person.
It's me. You're so lucky.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Hey, listen, you know, I'm taking a look at this, and I'm saying to myself, this is a very typical reaction of the left. What we're looking at over there is just not people out there trying to make a point over there. They're rioting. And that's what the left usually does. They've been doing it for so long. We saw that when Trump tried to have his meetings and things like that. Now, Ed, I watch Fox News. I mean, I know a lot of people don't like that idea, but a lot of people do watch Fox News. And one of the things that they always do, which I like, is that they show tape of people saying things. They went through some of the WikiLeaks things, and they have on tape some of the leaders saying, yeah, we hired these people to do this, and we hired these people to do that, and to go out there and to cause trouble. It's like a rent-a-mob thing.
Agitators.
Yeah, okay.
It exists on both sides. It exists everywhere. It's also called astroturfing.
Okay, but you know, when you take a look at the left, what do you see over there? I see lots of different groups of people. I see anarchists, I see communists, socialists, progressives, leftists, liberals, secularists, materialists, atheists, Satanists. Those are the people that I see on the left, and I think those people are more predisposed to do that kind of thing than you see on the right. When Obama won, the people on the right, like myself, were horribly upset. We had 8 horrible years of living in this country. You didn't see us get out there and destroy
Tony,
property.
Tony,
property.
I'm going to ask you, why were your 8 years so horrible?
They were so horrible because of the issues and the programs that he put down. I thought that he spent a lot of time seeking to control. Take a look at the executive orders. Take a look at all the restrictions.
You're being vague. I want specifics. Give me specifics. You're being vague.
Okay. Obamacare. Obamacare. Everybody has to go in. He was trying to push everybody into Obamacare. I'm one of those persons who was victimized by that. I'm retired. I have to buy my own insurance. After we were forced to go on to Obamacare because of governmental, I told us to, we had to do that starting January 1st, I think it was 2015.
What did you have prior to that?
I had Anthem. And then I went on to was United Healthcare. And I had a nice policy with United Healthcare. But once we got over there, number one, Obama said we can keep our plan. When I spoke to my insurance company, they said, no, you can't keep your plan. You have to accept the plan that is compatible with Obamacare. He said that your premiums were going to go down. My premiums went up 86.2%. I'm talking personally now. And I sat down with a pencil and paper, and I figured this out. My deductible went from $5,200 a year to $13,000 a year. Okay, now they're talking about, they're crowing about all of the people that they put on Obamacare, okay? But it looks like people like myself
Hold on. All right, so do you think those numbers would not have risen without Obamacare?
No, they wouldn't have risen like
that. The cost of health care has grown exponentially over the past few years, and that's one of the things we need to address. And the other thing is you, when you described the left, you called out communists, socialists, anarchists, leftists.
Yep.
You described everyone that I'm going to assume you have a negative opinion of. And some of those ideologies you listed are in direct conflict with one another. But yet you chose to put them under the left rather than perhaps opposition to what your candidate believes in. They don't all necessarily fall under the left. They just fall into opposing viewpoints. And I want to read you a quote from a Portland police spokesman saying that the anarchists aligned with the black bloc groups infiltrated the peaceful protest while covered head to toe carrying weapons. They also tweeted that the group's protest wasn't responsible for the violence. Basically, the police saying that anarchist groups were the ones destroying property and that they wouldn't stop doing it, and that demonstrators at many points chanted peaceful protest. So at what point do those outsiders who do not belong to the group of peaceful protesters, at what point do you decide that they do belong, or can't you treat them as two separate groups?
I'm simply saying, Ed, that anarchists are part of the left. They're part of it.
They're not. Tony, thank you. I have to hit a break in a minute anyway. You just, as I said, you listed all those groups, some of which have conflicting ideologies. Anarchists, by definition, aren't left or right. So you totally negated your conversation. But you decide to have such a narrow view of people's beliefs. There is your side, and then everybody else falls under the category of left. And that is just not how it works. There is a broad spectrum. And there are differing opinions. And anarchists aren't even on that spectrum. They don't believe in your spectrum. They don't believe in anything. And you have the police, who I'm assuming you put a lot of faith in, saying that there was a peaceful group of protesters going about it peacefully who were then infiltrated by another group who didn't. But you want to put the two of them together. In just a moment, we should be joined by Shannon Walker, who is an expert on PTSD and president of Northwest Battle Buddies, service dogs that help veterans embrace life again while dealing with PTSD, as almost one third of all service persons in the Afghanistan and Iraq conflicts suffer from PTSD and its complications of suicide and addiction. The idea of Northwest Battle Buddies and other groups like it are to help combat veterans regain their freedom and independence by partnering them with trained and matched service dogs at no choice. Obviously, as it being Veterans Day, there's no better time to talk about this than now, but every day is a good time to talk about it. There was a report that we just heard that was reassuring about improvements at the VA with 1 million more appointments this year. We can do better. If we are going to rally around the troops when we decide to send them off, we need to rally around them when they come home and realize that there are side effects and that there are consequences to putting human beings in that sort of situation, whether they are physical or mental or a combination of both. It is important to ask those who are willing to, or to help those who are willing to make the ultimate sacrifice. These are people who are willing to give their lives, and at the same time, when they come home alive, they might not come home whole, whether it is physically, mentally, or both. And we need to be willing to make the same investment in them when they return as we do when we outfit them with equipment and gear when we send them to fight. We need to put as much effort into their return to health as we do when we send them off to defend for us. So we should be hearing from Shannon Walker in just a few. We'll talk about the benefits of service dogs and what kind of training they get and what you can do to assist when it comes to vets. And I can remember a call I got a few months ago from an individual who had served, who had was talking about the thoughts that he had and the issues he was dealing with. And I told him that that is the first step, is asking for help. And I had a caller follow up to say, call the governor's office, and hopefully that person who called is still listening and is still with us and is doing well. Hopefully they found the help. But that is what's necessary. And it's very difficult for a lot of people to ask for help. Pride gets in the way of a lot of things, and being unaware of what's actually going on. Sometimes you're just reacting. And when you are taught to, I mean, that's military training. You are taught to be tough. You can't let things get to you. But when you return, ignoring things often turns to addiction and other issues. Joining us now is Shannon Walker of Northwest Battle Buddies and an expert on PTSD. Good to talk to you again, Shannon. Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Doing well.
Thanks for having me on.
Of course, anytime. As it is Veterans Day, it is important to talk about these things, but we can talk anytime, as I think it's a cause that needs to be touted more, and we need to realize that this isn't a one-day-a-year thing. These are issues that our vets are dealing with every day.
Absolutely. Veterans Day for our organization is every day, because it's a constant, everyday mindset of thank you for our freedom and thank you to our American heroes that have fought to preserve it and continue to stand in the gap for us.
And I was just talking about how it's almost hard for those who serve to override their training, which is, when you're being trained, it's you can't let things get to you. You can't let stress overwhelm you. You can't let fear overwhelm you. But when you return, you kind of have to turn that off and realize that there could be issues specifically pertaining to PTSD, and asking for help is one of the big problems for a lot of vets.
Absolutely. Not only for them, asking for help is perceived weakness to them, because that is part of their training, but it's also what I've encountered a lot with our veterans who we have provided service dogs for. In almost five years, we have provided 38 professionally trained service dogs to veterans, and it is not uncommon, just even in that 38, that they are very reluctant to receive a dog. Even though they reached out for help, when it comes right down to receiving the dog and having the opportunity for themselves, they don't want to take something from their brother or sister who may be more deserving or who may need it more. And so we have to, you know, I talk to them and I tell them that they're the inspiration. They're the ones that are going to inspire the others to seek help, to move on to a future of independence and freedom, and to be that example and that light to encourage the other brother to ask for help. And that it's okay. It's not a sign of weakness. It's just digging deeper into that courage to find a way to move forward to a life that is worth living and a life of hope. And the ripple effect of the organization and how it affects the men and women and the families and how the veterans themselves perceive that help and the gift that we give them, because these dogs are 100% gifted to them. It's amazing to watch the ripple effect and how life-changing it really is, not just for the veterans, but for their family members.
And there was a report during the break that the VA was able to see a million more patients this year than previously, as the VA has come under scrutiny. And that's got to be reassuring for someone like you who sees PTSD on a daily basis.
Absolutely. You know, the accountability of the VA goes without saying that there needs to be more accountability. And the fact that they are starting to recognize and steps are being moved forward to help where service dogs are being, you know, basically prescribed. You know, it's in the past, since we started this organization, the VA refers Northwest Saddle Buddies often to the veterans for them to seek help with us. But yet there was never any funding. All of our funding is all private funding and fundraisers that we do. And so for the VA to find alternative, you know, ways, many of our veterans either reduce their medicated drugs that they've been taking for years, or they actually completely go off their medication because the health and the benefits of the service dog long term, it's not just a weekend fun trip. It is a day in, day out service for that veteran to help them overcome, and a lot of them end up being prescription drug free because of their service dogs.
And let's talk about what the everyday person, what can somebody listening right now, what can I do to help assist not just Northwest Battle Buddies, but just our veterans and servicemen and women on a day-to-day basis?
You know, I think functioning with a constant gratitude of our freedom and looking for ways when we're out in public to have a heart of thank you for our service, but not just words, but to find ways to say thank you in a significant way. So even in people in their own area, finding organizations that they can partner with and join forces and bring their own gifts and talents to help support that organization. Because when you are, if it is through a 501c3, you are reliant on the people joining with you in heart and mind and resources to further your mission statement. And our mission statement is to empower, you know, combat veterans to a life of freedom by providing a highly trained service dog. And so along that way helps tremendously. But I think it starts with a day in and day out gratitude that we are willing to not just say, but put action behind it.
We're speaking with Shannon Walker, president of Northwest Battle Buddies and an expert on PTSD. Northwest Battle Buddies providing dogs to service persons free of charge, therapy dogs. And I have a question. This is purely selfish of me. When it comes to training the dogs, if there is a dog that doesn't meet your standards, what happens to them?
We find them a forever home.
Okay, because I'm looking for dogs. I'm in the market. I'm in the market for a dog, and one that comes well trained is on my list of things that I would like.
Well, you know what? Contact our organization and get on that list. We do have people that contact us and say, if you ever have a dog that doesn't make it, which of course we do, then we vet the home, we educate the owner to make sure that training doesn't go unsupported, and then for that dog, you know, especially if they started from a shelter, they go into a forever home, so they're saved also. So get on our list. We'd be happy to have
you. Oh, that's amazing. And how do you select your dogs? Is there a particular breed you favor, or and what does the training entail?
You know, we are not breed specific, but it does not mean we will use every breed either. The dog has to function in society in a practical way with size. And of course, we look for dogs that are young, healthy, and of temperament. You know, as far as the training, our dogs go through a minimum of 7 very vigorous months of training, which is minimum in preparing that service dog for the veteran. And they go through a lot of just straight up professional handling as far as obedience. And then our veterans go through a very strict 6-week to 2-month process learning how to handle the dog. So we prepare the dog and it's completely trained. Then we bring the handler in, pair him up, work with them for 6 to 8 weeks, and then they get to take their dog home.
Wow. I thought you were going to say 7 weeks of training for the dog. You said 7 months. That is intense.
Minimum.
Holy
yes.
cow. Well,
you know,
Shannon,
I've been
ahead.
A professional dog trainer for 20 years, and it's important to give our American heroes the best. And so our dogs, absolutely, temperament and obedience, They function in public with excellence, and I feel that's what our American heroes deserve, so that's what we try to give them on a daily basis.
And now, when you say, how are you funded, and can people make donations to Northwest Battle Buddies?
Absolutely, they can make donations. We also have a text to donate, and they can donate on our website. We also have a Facebook page, but all of our funding is 100% through private citizens and our fundraising. We have no government support. So and there's ways on our website through third-party fundraising throughout the United States that people can partner with us and help support what we do.
And how much would you say one of those dogs, once it's trained and on its way, what is the cost, dog training and all of that?
About $25,000.
Wow. So you definitely need the support of the people. So I'll be giving out all that information for you, and I'll do so again at the end of the show. Northwest Battle Buddies, Shannon Walker, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.